Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Thanks for listening to the latest Football Digest podcast, available on all podcast platforms. Subscribe now through Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Acast, or wherever you get your podcasts from, so you don't miss a single episode.
Hello and welcome to the Football Digest podcast. I'm your host, Conor Bromley, and I'm joined today by Andy Dunn and John Cross from The Mirror. We've got many things to talk about today, but we're actually going to start with probably the worst game of the weekend, certainly from my perspective. You know, I was badgering the wife. I was like, we need to be in for 4 o'clock because I need to be in to watch this game. It's a big game. I've got to watch it. And it was basically nap time. It was a not a great game of football. But saw you, Andy. I've put here, was it a bit of an underwhelming game for the neutral? So from my perspective, it was underwhelming. But do you think it was underwhelming for the neutral?
You know, I actually watched it back. I wasn't actually at the game. I was at Liverpool versus Brighton. I made the decision to go there, and John went to the Etihad. And then I watched it back. And yes, it was an underwhelming game. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Arsenal went there with a plan. The plan more or less worked. City was certainly nowhere near the best. But, you know, these games can happen. You can't... And in a way, you know, it's almost as though we all turn up to the Etihad expecting goals, expecting exciting football, expecting Haaland to score. And, you know, there are times when it doesn't happen. And that's just one of those games, you know, that City's, I think, you know, I don't think, you might think, well, actually, with Stones and Walker being out, it's just two defenders who are out. Okay, Stones is an auxiliary midfielder. However, it does disrupt their pattern. It does disrupt, you know, Walker this season in particular has been an outlet down that right-hand side that City have used to disrupt teams. So I think that probably had an impact. Arsenal's tactics had an impact. And these games can just happen. You know, we can't have, you know, goals and excitement every game. But yes, and obviously, you know, the wider picture is that the result was obviously better for the team that I watched winning Anfield, Liverpool.
John, do you think Arsenal kind of came for a 0-0 draw? That seems a little bit too sort of suggestive that they were, you know, not trying to win the game. But to me, it felt like they were going to be the happier of the two teams. I mean, we've seen Arsenal go in the past to Man City and collapse, whereas this season they're actually, you know, they've got 4 points of Man City and 4 points of Liverpool. That's a really strong indication that they can handle these occasions.
Yeah, I do think they've made a major step forward in their results against their title rivals, whereas last season, I do think they kind of caved, didn't they, most notably at the Etihad. And I think this time they showed they can really defend. They're incredibly well organised. I thought the letdown in the game plan was the final pass, basically. There was a couple of times when Odegaard might have slipped in. Havertz, for example, didn't quite work. You know, right at the end, Trossard escapes. And I think the master plan was probably, you know, to keep it really tight, limit City, restrict their play, and then try and nick one on the break. It's a bit of a classic old tactic, frankly, modernised by someone like Mikel Arteta, who's basically got so many kind of plans and sort of kind of theories and things for each player to adopt. I thought the centre-halves were brilliant. Ben White was terrific, actually, at right back as well. Probably didn't give enough praise for him on the day, actually. He was great. But, you know, I don't know that they were creative enough. That was the slight problem, because it feels at the moment any drop points and it's advantage, you know, someone else in the title race. And that's the thing, isn't it, really? I think Andy was at Anfield to see Liverpool. And I'm sure, you know, Liverpool been watching that and thinking, wow, this is a great day for us. But then they've got to back it up. But it doesn't get any easier, you know, because, you know, Man City have got a difficult game against Villa. And then, you know, Liverpool then have to go to Man United at the weekend. Arsenal got to go to Brighton. So it's really such a testing time. And I think then basically that's why I think a defeat for either of those two teams at the Etihad would have been a serious blow. I don't know that there's too much room for, you know, too much room for a margin for error, I should say, for City moving forward now.
Andy, were you surprised Erling Haaland? He took a lot of criticism, I think. I think Roy Keane in particular was quite critical of him. I think he said he was like a League Two striker. But you said, is he the kind of striker for all these games? Because to me, I would call it, he's like a garbage man. For me, he scores the goals against the poorer teams in the league. He can put four past the lower end teams. But in these big games, I often feel like he goes a little bit missing. I don't know if that's maybe very critical from my end, but I just sometimes watch him in these matches and he doesn't take the game by the scruff of the neck. And look, I know he relies on service, but to me, it felt like he didn't do enough, you know, in that final third to make himself available. And the criticism was heavy on him, but do you think it was fair?
Yeah, I think the League Two jibe is a little unfair. Probably very unfair, actually. But I think the problem with Haaland is that when you've got a game like that and you need maybe your attackers to be a little bit more creative, a little bit more ingenious. You know, when City won the league the season before Haaland arrived, you know, they didn't particularly have a conventional striker. They played without one, essentially, for the entire season. And what you found then across the front line was a lot of creativity, individuals able to produce that little bit of moments of magic. And of course, what Haaland can't do is he's not that type of Pep Guardiola player. We all know that. He's not that type of player who can come up with that little trick or that killer 6-yard pass. You know, he's an out-and-out finisher. He's a target man, essentially, a lot of the time, and a finisher. So it's a different type of player, and you've just got to accept that's what he is. You know, that's why I think that probably, you know, he won't be there for a particular, you know, length of time. I personally think that Haaland might do one more year, 3 years at City, and then that'll be it, certainly while Pep Guardiola's there, because say it's not being critical of Haaland when you say that when City are at their best, he looks worse than anyone. And that's because he can't play the Guardiola way. He doesn't link play like other players do. So I think it is being overly critical. He is what he is. And you know, he's a good finisher. He's a strong guy. But when City needs something a little bit different, he can't provide it. And he looks then, in situations like on Sunday, he looks cumbersome. He looks awkward. He looks as though his touch isn't great. And that's where the League Two jibe comes from.
John, what did you make of the way the game was refereed? Because Anthony Taylor let a lot go. He treated the game like it was like an Old Firm, a real high-intensity derby game. There was a challenge Gabriel Jesus did early in the game, which was a blatant yellow card. 99 times out of 100 is the yellow card, and he didn't give it. And he just was constantly like, I'm not going to go into my pocket in this game. I'm not going to book anyone, certainly in the first half, unless it's an absolute stormwall. Even the stormwall ones he wasn't given, but an absolute 100% stormwall yellow card. But were you surprised that he took that approach? And do you think the game benefited from it?
I was pleasantly surprised. I thought he was great. I absolutely hate mentioning referees in match reports, but I did on this occasion, actually, albeit towards the end, simply because I thought he was brilliant. Really, really good. He let it flow. And yes, I think there'll be occasions where both teams probably thought, oh, you know, screamed from the touchline and said, we should have had a book in there or it should have been a foul there. But I thought it's fantastic that he really let it flow. And I think that's the point, isn't it? That we do have some good referees at the top end, in my view, Taylor being one of them. And I do think that sort of kind of Michael Oliver is good as well. But that's what you want on the real showpiece games, you know, that everyone's sort of focusing on. And, you know, I know Paul Tierney's been in the news a lot lately, but I mean, it's just, in my view, he's just not in the same class as, you know, the top end officials. And I just think it's obvious. And I know other people will get upset by this, but use your top officials for the very top games. It's simple, you know, and then basically you get an outcome like that. And listen, City were complaining about tactical fouls and Arsenal slowing the game down a bit, weren't they? You know, it was interesting to see Akanji saying sort of called talking also almost about Arsenal's dirty tricks. Well, you know, everyone does it basically at that level. And, you know, City down the years have been pretty clever and pretty effective at taking sting out games. But I thought it was great for a change that basically we didn't get that many yellow cards. Could have bowled over. It could have been nasty. But did Taylor ever lose control of the game? Absolutely not. I thought it was great. Absolutely really good. And it was a breath of fresh air. And I actually think if we're going to criticise them, and my word, do we criticise them, we should actually praise them on occasion as well. And I think he deserves credit.
Andy, you mentioned you were at the Liverpool game against Brighton. It looked for a little while like it could be a disappointing afternoon at Anfield, but they turned the game around. They kind of showed that title winning grit, didn't they? You know, that's the kind of performance you're looking at the end of the year. You don't play at your best, but you manage to find a way to come from a goal behind and win the game. Were you impressed with Liverpool at the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, Connor actually thought they were good. I didn't think it was a case of them gritting it out or whatever. I thought Liverpool were good. I mean, really good. You know, I listened, the goal came a little bit out of the blue, obviously very early on. Great finish from Danny Welbeck. And listen, Liverpool, strangely, John mentioned refereeing there. Dave Coo refereed this game, and he had a bit of a struggle early on, and he actually went the opposite way to Anthony Taylor and produced some early yellow cards. He got one for Alexis McAllister early on, quite a soft one, but Liverpool just it didn't affect them at all. It didn't affect their rhythm. They came back into the game. Obviously, Diaz scored, and then Mohamed Salah got the winner, and he could have had three or four. I think he had 12 attempts on goal himself. Liverpool created loads of chances. Listen, Brighton were dangerous on the counter-attack. They really were. They looked lively on the counter-attack. Liverpool looked a little bit vulnerable, but they always looked like scoring goals, Liverpool. And I was very impressed by them. I really was. I thought it was a very, very good performance. It was a very ominous performance with 9 games now to go. It was more convincing than the 2-1. They dominated Brighton in a way that I don't think they've dominated them before. All aspects of their game look to be working well. The goalkeeper is superb, and bear in mind, he's only the reserve goalkeeper. You know, Alisson might be back, I guess, but, you know, I mean, it won't matter if he is, because Kelleher is playing exceptionally well. Defensively, Van Dijk is just running the show for them. Conor Bradley is a real threat from fullback, you know, so they're not missing Alexander-Arnold, although he'll be back as well. And, of course, they carry that threat across the front line, you know, with Diaz, Nunes and Salah. And yeah, it was far more impressive than a 2-1 scoreline suggests. And I thought it was ominous, you know, and I think they should be title favourites right now.
Yeah, you've kind of backed Liverpool from day one, haven't you, as title favourites, and you've...
Yeah, I thought this would be a good season for them. I thought you know, they are the type of team to bounce back from disappointment. And in Klopp, of course, they've got... And of course, they've got that extra motivating factor now, as if they needed it, of Klopp actually going. In the, you know, at every game, Anfield now is... You know, infused with that feeling. Well, you know, it's the countdown to Klopp's farewell. It all adds into the narrative. You know, they weren't great when they got beat by Manchester United at Old Trafford. But again, in a cold light today, when you look at that game, they were a bit unlucky. Really, they should have won the game. They had the game in the palm of their hands when they were 2-1 up. So I'm not seeing much of Liverpool now that makes me think they're going to falter at all. And I just think, you know, they've got players coming back from injury. Curtis Jones will be back. You know, they've got a lot of depth now, a lot of depth. You know, bear in mind, Jota's been out for quite a while. You know, they and of course, when they did need their young players, the young players stepped up as well. There's a good feeling around that place right now. And I honestly think the Klopp is looking at that fixture list now, and he won't say it, obviously. You know, he said, listen, you know, we want, you know, one down, 9 to go in the 10-game running. And, you know, he's looking at that fixture list and he's thinking... You know, I'm thinking I can look at that list now and think they can win every game, and I would back them to do that, and they win the title. I mean, John mentioned just quickly. John mentioned earlier, well, you know, tricky games coming up. Man United away for them on Sunday. It's not a tricky game. They'll win that game, and I think they'll win in a canter.
We When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, we've got games before and midweek games coming up. It's a busy week of Premier League football, but we've got Arsenal, Luton at home. Man City have got out home, Aston Villa, Liverpool at home, Sheffield United. So, John, all three teams you would expect would win that game. But the question I want to ask is, we've got nine games left. How many points will it take, do you think, to win the title? I mean, are we talking perfection? Do you need to win all nine games to win it, or can somebody afford a slip up?
Oh, I don't think that City can afford many slip ups. I think that Arsenal can afford maybe one draw. And I think if you look at it, I wonder whether Liverpool might even be able to squeeze in, you know, a defeat or a draw and still be champions. I make Andy right. I do think Liverpool are favourites now. But these teams, what they've been really good at in recent seasons is going on those crazy 9, 10, 11, 12 game winning runs. So they're all capable of doing it. I've got to take issue with you, Connor, though, but basically, I think Man City Villa is a hard game. Yeah, they're really, I think that's the trickiest of it. You know, there's no easy games at this level. They're all difficult in the Premier League, and we know that about basically, you know, and all those cliches. So I do think that, you know, Luton fighting for their lives, you know, Sheffield, and so it's fighting for different reasons and what have you, and showed a bit of spirit on Saturday. But let's not fool ourselves here. Villa's the tricky one here. And if City can't quickly rediscover their poise and their pose, then I don't think, you know, I think anyone that suggests that will be easy, because Villa have got things to chase. And I think Villa have got to be a little bit nervous and got to keep winning to kind of really keep up the tilt on the top four. Can I just chuck one in about Liverpool? Bit of an unsung hero. Well, he's not unsung really, but basically Alexis McAllister, what a season he's having. I knew he was a good player. He's won the World Cup, so no one's fooling themselves that he's a bit, you know, he's gone under the radar. But what a season. Again, he's making killer passes each and every week. So I think he's the key, I think, in a way, for Liverpool, because then he releases Salah and, you know, it's just fantastic, I think, at the moment, Liverpool. And I just think they're in that groove. And so I think with him, I think he's, you know, he's making a bit of an outside case here for player of the year, footballers, you know, FWA footballer of the year. So I think that, you know, there's, I do think that really Liverpool have probably got the bit between their teeth, and the others just cannot afford to have too many slip-ups at all. Not at all. I would say that Arsenal probably got to be near as perfect to win it. Maybe eight wins and a draw might do it. But basically, I think Liverpool could still get away with one slip-up and still be champions, because I'm not sure whether all three can really seriously win all nine. I don't think they're, you know, City are, I think, they're still technically better than the rest, but not as good as they were last season. So I think there will be twists and turns yet.
Andy, who do you think, if there's one that's going to slip out of the race, who do you think of the three is most likely to not be there come the final game of the season, playing on that final day, trying to get the win to get the title?
I think City, I agree with Jonathan. I think City can afford no slip-ups, and I think they will slip up. I think City, it's just an incredible... The whole idea... excuse me. The whole idea that City could do a double-treble, I think it was fanciful at best. You know, they're now in a position where it is still on. However, to do that, you know, it would be such a monumental achievement and such a demanding achievement. And I do think City now, and I think it's perfectly excusable, I think the intensity with which they played for, you know, well, for the last three seasons, and in particular last season, winning everything, I think it will catch up with you in the end. I think it will take a psychological toll. I really do. I generally think that subconsciously, Pep, Guardiola, and even some of the senior players will probably be you know, Pep's had a moan about the calendar, and I agree with him. You know, it's relentless for City at the moment. Obviously, they're all still involved in Europe. Don't forget Arsenal, Liverpool, and City. Liverpool obviously maybe got the less taxing games in the Europa League against Atalanta. However, they're still playing. But I think with City's case, that I think they'll be subconsciously, I wouldn't blame them for now prioritising the Champions League. You know, and I think in their mind, you know, they've won the title so many times. I think in their mind, they'll be thinking, what if we had to do one thing now, what would it be? And I think it'd be win the Champions League, defend the Champions League, win the Champions League twice on the row rather than the Premier League four times on the row. I do think the game against Real Madrid will take precedence, I think, in as far as Guardiola is concerned. And that will mean that, you know, the league games that surround it might, you know, they might not be as strong as they normally are. So I think for that reason, I think City will be the ones that will slip up. I agree with John. I don't think it's a given that they're going to beat Villa. And if that wasn't the case, then you'd be at the stage, if they fell further behind than they are now, considering their goal difference is worse, they're 3 points off the top now. If they were, say, to go 6 points off the top, I do think you'd be at the stage now where you might even think they clearly would never give up, but they might start thinking, well, hang on, we're 6 points away from the top. Champions League, FA Cup, take precedence. So that would not surprise me at all.
Well, we've got another big game in midweek, although not as big as it probably normally is. Chelsea against Manchester United. It's not often we have a mid-table clash? Borderline? I don't know. Maybe Man United would take a bit of offence at that. But not often these two teams meet, and they're both as poor as they are at the minute. I mean, Man United got a lot of stick for their performance against Brentford. And Brentford had 31 shots, didn't they? And, you know, that's not good enough for a Manchester United team. And Chelsea, of course, dropped points against 10-man Burnley. So that was hardly a good performance as well. How do you see this one going, John? Do you think it'll be a nervy draw? Do you think maybe both managers will take the shackles off and try and, you know, put on a show?
Well, I don't think they've been able to put on a show all season, to be honest with you. I mean, honestly, I just don't know where. Let's start with Chelsea. I just don't know where they are anymore. I think the one thing that I think is becoming increasingly certain is that Pochettino will leave at the end of the campaign. It's just not working. I did, you know, it was funny, really. I went out for a nice long walk on Saturday afternoon and had to sort of kind of radio going in my ear, and Ian Dennis was sort of commentating on another game, but they kept on flipping back to Stamford Bridge, and you're thinking, well, they're down to 10 men. They've taken the lead. They'll definitely win this time, and surely maybe they've still got an outside chance of you. Only Chelsea can basically blow it against 10 men. You know, gift of a penalty, by the way, never a penalty in a million years. Even Dermot Gallagher on Monday was on his ref watch said it wasn't a penalty. Even Dermot Gallagher. So it's just, you know, to say it was a gift is putting it mildly. And, you know, I can understand why, you know, sort of players and managers get upset in those sort of instances. And they still threw it away. And I tell you what else they threw away. They threw away a realistic chance, I think, of closing the gap on European places. You know, it was an outside shot. And I just think, you know, they're just not in that conversation anymore. They're not good enough. They don't deserve to be, frankly. So it's always nervous. You wonder at what point the fans are going to go. I thought the fans deserve credit for backing Sterling, who's had a bit of a you know, dodgy time lately, although he then missed a late chance. But they backed him, you know. So you can't really accuse the Chelsea fans of, you know, being too negative on this occasion. I don't think. They're just fed up. Basically, and United, you know, I mean, wow, you know, there's a number of conversations to be had over whether they were worse, you know, in the previous Brentford game, which was the real low point, wasn't it? Or this one. I mean, honestly, shocking. And you just wonder where it's going with Ten Hag. And I have to say, every game seems like a, you know, real sort of investigation and sort of a look and sort of a very close look and see whether Ten Hag can take this United team forward. And based on that, just no, they're just hanging in there. I mean, Brentford, I think, produced one of the best performances of the whole weekend. I mean, it was absolutely remarkable. They are missing so many players and they battered and embarrassed Manchester United, who were so lucky then to go ahead. And a massive credit to Brentford. you know, to still come back, I think owes them a huge, you know, sort of kind of pat on the back and massive credit. But for United not to win that game, it's just unforgivable. So at the moment, the two teams that are flatlining, and I tell you what, I think they'll flatline their way to a, you know, a pretty average, you know, game on Thursday night. And I think it'll probably be a draw, to be honest. Terrible, terrible seasons for both.
Andy, you know, John mentioned there Pochettino probably, in his mind, not being the Chelsea manager going into next season. What do you think the chances are where sat here in August previewing the season and we've got Erik ten Hag and Mauricio Pochettino at these clubs?
Well, I actually probably think that Pochettino might have more of a chance of being still Chelsea manager than Ten Hag as United manager. I find it baffling. You know, I went to Carrington to the training ground on Friday to do Erik Ten Hag's pre-match press conference, and he was on great form. He's on good form. Obviously, he was incredibly buoyed by that win against Liverpool in the FA Cup, which obviously went into the international break. He had, in theory, a good international break in the sense that, you know, obviously Kobe Manu was outstanding for England. Rashford didn't play much, but, you know, so he was fit. Muller players, you know, he didn't really have too many injury worries. Players were coming back. And he the feeling around Carrington was upbeat. I mean, it was genuinely upbeat around the whole place. And Ten Hag was an example of that. And then they go to Brentford, and I was just absolutely terrible. And it is just, it's not unusual for this Manchester United team to be dominated by teams that big teams should dominate. You know, and we've seen Fulham go to Old Trafford and win. You know, Brentford obviously should have won that game. It's on repeats. They're a team that can't play. They're an elite team, in theory, that can't play on the front foot. You know, when they win on the counter-attack. They can't, if you look at all the top teams in Europe and in the Premier League, you know, they get hold of a game, they dominate a game, they dominate possession. Manchester United just don't do that. Now Ten Hag's argument is that he doesn't have the players yet to do that, but, you know, he's been there a while now, and I really like him. I really, really like him, and I really think that he could make a go of it, but I just can't see. When you have performances like that, they're clearly not going to finish in the Champions League place now. You've got a whole new co-ownership model coming in. I'm sure we'll get on to talk about that in a sense of who they're recruiting in their executive board. So they're putting all these people in place. Well, hopefully they are, when Gardner leaves, finish for half of them. But they're putting these people in place. And then will all these people want Erik ten Hag? I mean, that's why I don't think, at least I'm not saying that I think he should be sacked, because I do like the guy. I do think he should get time. However, I don't think that Sir Jim Ratcliffe, Dave Brailsford, Dan Ashworth, Omar Berada, yeah, whoever else is coming in. I don't think they're going to turn around. I think they will have an idea of a new start, a fresh start. And unfortunately, I think that might mean that Ten Hag goes. And listen, I'm also not convinced that Ten Hag himself. That it wouldn't be for his benefits to move on as well, because at the moment, you know, it's going really poorly for him. And I think he'll have an ownership model that will want to be very much hands-on. And maybe, you know, listen, his stock, the thing about Manchester United now is that the stock of a manager who fails there doesn't necessarily fall, because it's always seen as the problems at Manchester United are said to be far more deep-rooted than just whoever's in the coaching role. So it might be best for both parties if they part ways.
John, you know, there was Andy touching it there, but they've approached Jason Wilcox from Southampton. I think they've gravely irritated Southampton in the process. We also had the Dan Ashworth thing with Newcastle, and they gravely irritated Newcastle with their approach there. Obviously, they want to put their building blocks in place. That's their prerogative. But do you think Manchester United are maybe going about this process in maybe a slightly disrespectful way to other teams? Because it feels like their approach has been very bull in a china shop. You know, it hasn't been done with much tact.
Has it? I don't think it has, to be honest. I mean, if you want to make an omelette, you've got to break some eggs. You know, I think they're basically, I don't think it's ever thus in football, isn't it? I mean, there's been some outrageous tap-ups. you know, down the years, you know, where secret, you know, hotel meetings, sort of Premier League fines and, you know, I mean, sort of the absolute sort of kind of maximum penalties. And none of these feel like that, to be honest. They really don't. I just think that Man United are trying to build a structure and basically week in, week out, where people like us are on shows sort of saying they've got to get the structure right. Well, how do you get the structure right? You get the best people. And then basically, you know, you go to Man City, for, you know, for your new chief exec, you go to, you know, Newcastle for the guy that everyone in football says is the best in the business, and Dan Ashworth. And now they're going for, you know, recruitment in Jason Wilcox. Well, you know, that's life, isn't it? It's not great timing. We're going to seize on the stories. Of course we are. I mean, it was put to the Southampton manager, wasn't it, immediately post-match, and he was clearly not happy about it as that story was developing. It was developing sort of obviously as a story, you know, behind the scenes during the game sort of thing, really. But let's be honest, we'd be naive to think this hasn't been going on for a little while, and they're clearly going for the best people in the business. Well, the best people in the business are going to be in jobs, and it's everlasting. So I don't actually think it's that outrageous, really. You know, these things happen. A few people sort of kind of explored at the weekend, didn't they, about sort of Arsenal getting, you know, Mikel Arteta and that causing a bit of bad blood from Manchester City at the time. Well, you know, you move on and you kind of think at the sort of the pre-match, you know, embraces, tells you a lot about sort of kind of the story, and it's evolved. You know, it's just one of those things. It happens in football, and I have to say at the end of it, I think Man United will end up with a decent structure. I think they'll end up with a structure that a lot of people have been calling for. And I do also think that, as Andy sort of says, I think they'll probably end up with a structure that's not going to embrace Erik ten Hag. And like Andy, I think Erik ten Hag is a good football manager who's done well at Manchester United. This season has been an absolute poison chalice for him because of everything, the politics going on behind the scenes. And he still made them relatively competitive. You know, there's dreadful performances like at Brentford, for example. I think they've been pretty competitive. And when you consider the mayhem behind the scenes, and maybe he got right this season off, I think he carries himself quite well. And I think he'll find himself another top job in Europe somewhere, to be honest, even if he does part ways, as I suspect most of us think he probably will.
Right, we'll finish off. We'll talk about my favourite thing, which is the relegation battle. Love a relegation battle, but we'll give a quick few minutes to the relegation battle. Burnley, they are at home against Wolves. You know, they've got a chance of survival now due to the points deductions. Everton really struggle at the minute. They have to go to Newcastle, and you'd think that'll be a hard task. Nottingham Forest are at home against Fulham. You'd think that that is a 100% must-win game. But, Andy, how do you see the relegation battle? Because Everton have got, I think they've maybe got 3 or 4 points, haven't they, on the relegation zone at the minute. But they are probably the one that's in the worst form. They just don't look like winning a game.
12 games without a win. And not looking like, not only they not look like winning games, They don't look like scoring goals. I mean, that is the big issue. You know, they got one on Saturday, but it was quite fortunate, really, probably a mistake from the keeper. And they don't look like scoring goals. Added to that, of course, imminently, probably early next week, I think, isn't it? They'll find out if they have any more points deducted. For their case, you know, and you would imagine maybe they might get a couple, so that will put them in peril. I do think they've probably got enough to be okay. But yeah, they're the ones at the moment that are going to be looking. I think you're right. I think if they win against Wolves, they'll be quite buoyed by that. I still believe that the three who came up will go down. But it'll be close. I mean, it will be close. And Everton, as you say, they're the ones at the moment. So it's tough to see them getting anything against Newcastle, and that will just add further pressure, you know. And I think Sean Dyche at the moment, you know, is finding it tough. And I don't think they look a happy bunch at the moment. Let's put it that way.
John, I know you're an advocate of Luton staying up normally. You know, you're quite ardent on Luton. I want to throw it to you that I think of the teams in the bottom three right now, I think Burnley three games undefeated. They've won in there as well. I think they've actually probably got the best chance of getting out there, which I wouldn't have said a few weeks ago, but I just think there's fight in there. The fact that they got that draw at the weekend against Chelsea, to me, suggested that they have a little bit more than Luton, who I think have been pretty... I mean, that defeat they had at Bournemouth the other week, I just think was the nail in their coffin. I just think to be 3-0 up and lose that game was criminal. What do you think, Burnley? Oh, them three, or do you think Luton probably got the best chance?
I've been so almost so negative on Burnley and Sheffield United. It feels like I kind of wrote them off months ago. They're the two that are going down. But I think you're right. I think Burnley are showing a bit of fight. I mean, it was amazing, wasn't it, listening to sort of kind of the game with Sheffield United, for example. There was a point where they thought they'd gone 4-1 up in that game, and it was disallowed for VAR. And then basically eventually Fulham could pull it back to 3-3. And then basically, I think that's Sheffield United, you know, season all over. So I can't see a way out for the Blades. I just can't. But I think you might be right in that Burnley are just showing a little bit more than at any point previously. Why are they doing that? I think actually they're showing a bit more about them. I think that, you know, Vincent Kompany has been, you know, if he's been guilty of one thing, he's trying to play and stick to his principles a little bit too much. And I think they're showing a little bit more grit, determination, and, you know, they've got some fight in there. The reason I like Luton is that basically I think, you know, they're trying to battle their way with a championship squad. Rob Edwards carries himself brilliantly. And I think that stadium is a real throwback, you know. And so I love going there. I think it's great. I do admire what Edwards has done to kind of galvanise that squad. But, you know, I'm beginning to think that. I mean, they might surprise us all and go and get a result at Arsenal now. But, I mean, basically, because I think Arsenal rest a few, by the way. But I just feel as if, you know, they're running out of chances, basically, because they have had a few chances to kind of, you know, make, you know, go clear, Bournemouth being one of them. You know, should they have taken a point of Spurs and gone ahead and all those sort of things. And they're just missing opportunities, really. But I do feel as if, you know, let's see what happens next for Everton, because Everton have, you know, been distracted. There's no doubt about it. I don't know whether Andy would agree, but I think they have been distracted by, you know, all the off-field stuff. It would be impossible not to. And that's why I think if they also get another points deduction and still survive, I think Sean Dyche, despite this wretched run, should be in the conversation of manager of the season. How he's kept it together, honestly, fantastic job of work. I mean, I know, you know, that won't please a lot and it's sort of a bit unfashionable to say so, but my God, how do they focus? I mean, you know, I know they're on this terrible run and basically, so I'm almost talking against myself here. I still think he's galvanised, but I just don't see, Forest are not great. Forest are really not great. And I think their sense of injustice is also a bit of a negativity for them. So I have to say, I think it'll be the three who came up will go back down, you know, sort of being, you know, sort of kind of say the wrong thing about Luton. But I tell you what, a return to the Championship after the Championship weekend over Easter, you know, is not the worst thing in the world, I have to say, because what a weekend it's been in the FA. Absolutely astonishing. But anyway, I digress. But I do think it'll be the bottom three that ultimately pay the penalty.
Yeah, I was hoping we wouldn't talk about the Championship after my team took a 5-1 defeat at home against Blackburn. But Andy, just before I let you go, I'm just curious to see your perspective on whether or not the relegation will be sorted by 38 games, or do you think we'll see a battle in the courtroom because of all the regulations, similar to kind of when West Ham stayed up all them years ago with Sheffield United, which I would argue is probably one of the greatest injustices in Premier League history, but that's a conversation for a different day. But do you think this will be settled in the courtroom, or do you think this will be settled? Do the Premier League make sure this is done by 38 games, no questions asked?
No, I think it was. I know there is that doomsday scenario of an appeal going beyond that, or the judgments on the appeal going beyond that. Personally, I don't think that will happen. I don't. I think obviously Forest are going to appeal or have appealed. Everton, I would imagine, will do the same. I actually think, I mean, the only reason I say that, that it will be settled is because I believe that Forest and Everton will survive. So obviously then they won't have any recourse. Whether any of the other clubs then below them take any action, I'm not sure. I don't think they will. I don't know. Listen, it's based on very little other than my hunch that they'll survive anyway, regardless of what points they've had deducted. I think that's why it'll be settled.
Excellent. Well, it's going to be a good end of the season because everything is pretty much still to play for, which is exactly what we want as people who make our living talking about football. So thanks, John, for joining us this morning. Thanks, Andy, as well. Enjoy your holiday, Andy, after this. Away for a few days, so enjoy that. And we'll catch you next week to talk about what I'm sure is another crazy weekend of Premier League football. So thanks, guys, for joining us.